Joanne Keaton, North Carolina State University. I want to remind everyone in the room of two resources that are available to you now for the study of team science. The first is the Interdisciplinary Network for Group Research. We're in our fifth year as a nonprofit association. All we do is study groups and teams. We would love to have you join us. And our fifth year conference this year is in July 21st, 22nd, 23rd, and we're in Arlington, Virginia. Next year we'll be in Minneapolis, and then the year after that in 2012, we hope to be in Boston. So ingroup.info, all we do is study groups and teams. So if you want to come learn from the folks who study groups and teams, and it's about 20 disciplines worth of people. So please come join us. The second outlet that I'll give you is Small Group Research. I'm the editor. So we invited Steve Fiore to talk about interdisciplinary team science a couple of years ago, and we invite your submissions, and I plan to take back to the rest of the editorial team their views about incorporating perhaps another special issue about team science, or perhaps a special section on team science that's regular. So again, we welcome, it's the study of groups and teams. The small is just a holdover from a long time ago, so don't worry about the small. Just, it's groups and teams research, peer-reviewed, and small group research. Thanks.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you so much for sharing that. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave Stone again, NIU. Just an appeal to everybody who serves as a peer reviewer on journals in which the science of team science is trying to get published. Please don't knee-jerk reject negative findings. It's absolutely critical to inchoate disciplines that the negative findings get out there as fast as the positive findings so that they can be followed up on to make sure that they're accurate and so that people do know what doesn't work as well as they know what does work so that we don't keep reinventing broken wheels either.
Thank you, Dave.
Dawn Basley, York University. Thank you very much for an amazingly educational experience. I think we get to report back to about 15 people at our university, so we'll be writing up our notes and we'll make sure that we send them to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
So I've been thinking a lot about what my colleague, fellow biology professor Schultz had said, and it seemed to me that one of the things, if we want to start to really test some of these models, for those of us who feel like grant writing machines might consider doing, because I was thinking of doing this myself, you know, how am I going to figure out whether some of the solutions and approaches that we've heard here might work, is, you know, we could actually alternate on every other grant, do some of these things and then do it the old way and see if we have a success rate. I mean, somehow we need a sample of grant applications controlled for various metrics where you're looking to see. I mean, I guess what I want to know is, I've learned a lot of what we've been hearing about the hard way, and sort of have moved into this space saying, oh yeah, that's great. I wish I knew that 6 years ago. But I mean, it would be very interesting to know if these different approaches inform. And so, for example, we recently got a federal government of Canada, the foundation that funds climate change research. And one of the things that we did a lot was we communicated with the funder to find out what they really meant by the terms of the grant. And we were one of the few groups that got it. And you know, they actually told us that that was one of the reasons why. So we do have some anecdotal evidence, but it would be fun to, you know, obviously writing a grant, you want to maximize your chances of getting it, but you somehow need to get that test. I'm not sure what it is, but anyway, I hope we can get there.
So two things in response to that. The National Science Foundation actually did an assessment of their large research center grants and looked for, you know, what were some of the main reasons that proposals were rejected. The number one reason for a research center proposal being rejected was a lack of coordination between the people working on it, so that the ones rejected looked more like five different people wrote five different pieces of the grant and were going to be working as five different independent units. So they did that. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, so they did that. Here at Northwestern, when I was originally with our Office of Research Development and Central Administration, over the 5 years that I ran the unit, we actually did quantify the grant success rate. So we were the facilitators of providing assistance for large team-based research projects, and we were able to look at the number and the success of grants that were funded in our with support from research development. So this may not be the best. It was hard, right? I didn't want to say, well, hey, you guys do it, but we're not going to help you, and you guys do it, and we'll help you. It's the kind of controlled experiment that the grant writing faculty don't appreciate. So what we did is looked at the average rate of success of proposals that went through research development. We were up at about 51% success rate of grant proposals when there was facilitation through the Office of Research Development and an emphasis and a focus on the team aspects of those proposals. And this was at a time where the external funding landscape in the United States was hovering at just about the 15%, 16% success rate. So we took 51% minus 16. We took that percent, multiplied the total number of grant dollars, and it was 84 million additional grant dollars brought into the university, direct costs over 5 years. You add on the indirect costs in large part. You can add on because a lot of those opportunities were from the NIH. And it was a considerable opportunity to look on return and investment of focusing some resources on being able to do team-based research projects.
I guess I'd just like to add my voice of thanks for a really fantastic couple of days. Wow, thank you. And since we are too soon being cut off, I'd like to just take this opportunity to remind everyone that my group, the Toolbox Group, and I'm part of it, and Renee's got flyers back there too, providing hopefully an opportunity to continue this discussion a little bit later in the year. So we've got a conference on enhancing communication in cross-disciplinary research, which will be happening at Coeur d'Alene in Idaho. And Idaho's a beautiful state, and this is the most beautiful part of the state, so you should be there, right? But this is happening at between September the 30th and October 2nd, and we're still really in the process of like gathering proposals for panel sessions and talks. So please, if you want to be, let's continue this conversation. See either Renee or I, and come to Idaho. And thank you very, very much, Ellie.
Thanks. And as everybody's shared their information, please email it to me so we can, even before we have a listserv, of course, I have all your email addresses, and we can get that out to you, all of this information. Share it. We'll collect it through the weekend, and come Monday or Tuesday, we'll be able to share all of these resources with you pretty immediately. So if everybody who's announced something fabulous that you're working on, just send me a quick email with hyperlinks or an email for folks to be able to contact you, and we'll get that out as rapidly as possible to everybody who was here. Hey, Nancy.
I wanted to put out another idea for somebody to think about researching or thinking about how do you end well? So a lot of times, like, we focus on the project itself, but then, you know, like, there's also synergies and times to go. I think about what can you take away if you choose not to stay in a team? What's yours? What's not? Of course, there's all kinds of professional issues for young people. I'd also love to know more what happens to the people who are in these, the junior people, the people who are hidden in some of the analysis. So, you know, like, what happens to them? Is it beneficial for them or not? Where do they go? So just some of those other ideas out there. As well as, you know, like, if you want to answer important questions for a funding agency, you know, think about, you know, what the impact of the form of the funding, the length, how it comes, actually, are there ways to assess it so that you can provide useful information for changing that? You know, what happens by, you know, having length of money, what, you know, those are the kinds of questions that if you want different tools, from funding agencies, different kind of mechanisms, well then, if you can provide them information about how it really affects practice, then your opportunity is to make an evidence-based case for different tools.